On this episode of Ask Christian Counseling Associates, we explore the lost art of wonder and creativity in our culture, its impact on our mental health, and how embracing God's creative spirit within us can restore it. Join us with special guests Isabel Toomey and Ben Sines of CCA as we explore creativity and the art of noticing. Welcome, everybody, to Ask Christian Counseling Associates, and I want to say welcome to my special guests, Isabel Toomey and Ben Sines. Ben, welcome back. You've been on the podcast before. Isabel, this is your first time today. So why don't we start out with you and just tell the folks a little bit about yourself, what you're doing here at CCA, and anything else you'd like to share.
Sure. Yeah, I work here as a counselor, also intake supervisor.
Intake supervisor, yes.
Yeah, that crew of people that answer that first phone call when you call in. And so I've been here for about 2 years. I love it. Happy to be.
We told her to say that.
Yeah. Brought to you by CCA. No. Yeah. What else do you want to know?
Well, so you're an intake supervisor, mm-hmm. and Ben, you're on the intake team, mm-hmm. and I'm an original intake person. And you know, we're really passionate about mm-hmm. talking to the people who call in. Yeah, so yep. we always just take a pause to thank everybody. You know, it is really an honor to get every phone call from people who would use our number. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, it's not only the phone, but you can text and you can email. You know, just there's a ton of things that you field, and we get. I don't know. Would it be fair to say like 100 to 200 contacts a day?
Oh, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And we have a team of like 12 to 15 people, and yeah. you are one of the managers of that team.
Yep.
So we really appreciate that. And beyond that, I think I would ask, what made you want to become a counselor? That's one of the things we've mm-hmm. been asking everybody who, from CCA who comes on. We asked Ben last time. So.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I'll give you maybe the condensed version. You know, my intention
That's fine.
Was.
We have time.
My intention was not to become a counselor when I went to school. My undergrad is in fine art. I had every intention to be an art teacher.
Okay.
I finished my undergrad and kind of really just took a step back and said, what do I want to do? And I felt that, you know, a lot of different people in my life that I feel were, you know, brought there by God and were speaking to me, really identified these qualities that I had that I was really passionate about, you know, talking to people, helping people. Hmm. And that's kind of what brought me back to pursue counseling. Yeah. And eventually what brought me here.
So you were going to be an art teacher.
Yes.
And I assume that would be at a college or a public school or something
yeah.
like that, like art classes.
Yeah. I would have, originally tried to do like high school level, gone from there.
Did you get to do any student teaching? Did you have any like experiences?
I didn't do like full student teaching. I did a lot of like shadowing. I did some private art tutoring. But past that, I really didn't love classroom setting. So that's kind of what
that was
paused me.
One of the big things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Was there something, you know, as you become, you know, wanting to become a counselor, I should say, any like one moment or a series of things that happened for you that say like, yeah, like this is it. This is what I want to do.
Yeah. Well, outside of art school, I worked in restaurant leadership. And so my main focus there was developing leaders.
Are you allowed to say what restaurant you work with?
I don't know. Am I?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you can talk about anything. Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, I worked for Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A. Okay.
So
I love Chick-fil-A.
We do love Chick-fil-A.
I did a lot of, leadership development. I did a lot of culture building.
Tell me your title. I'm sorry. I brought it up too early.
I worked as a culture director.
Culture director.
That was cool. Part of my title, part of my role, getting people excited to work there, getting people excited to eat there, right? So in that, I really said, like, okay, you know, if Chick-fil-A isn't my future, what is? What do I love about this job? And it was that almost development, one-on-one coaching that
tea time
brought me here. called it tea time with my team.
We've talked about this because we both met our spouses in restaurants. We both
Experience around there too.
Well, now we're at the point now where we've got it's just CFA and I'm OG, so Olive Garden. But you spend so much time in a restaurant and you get to know people and you. Mm-hmm. I think restaurant work is the closest. It fits so many different categories of jobs. Like you learn so much about just people, life, you name it, working in a restaurant, and it's.
Yeah.
Like we even talked about with spouses, like the cool thing about, meeting somebody like that in a restaurant is you see how they handle all types of different situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like you see how they handle stress, how they handle responsibility, work ethic, what happens when, conflict, all these things. And you, mm-hmm. but yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't plan to talk about this, but we don't make any plans, right, Alex? So, but you met your wife
mm-hmm.
at Olive Garden?
I did.
Wow. So my first date with my wife was at Olive Garden.
So cool.
The Olive Garden here in Greensburg still exists. This is ancient history. But I also worked in restaurants. And this might be TMI for the folks that don't want to know their counselors worked in restaurants. But my first job was in a restaurant. And just memory etched into my mind. I feel like I've talked about this before. Maybe not. It was called Cassidy's at the time, but it was before that. It was 2+2, and it was right on. It was in Allegheny County, and it was this. It was like traditional food place, but I was the dishwasher, and the dishwashing line was right next to the kitchen, and so me and the cook would spend hours and hours and hours together, and I just really learned to just. I was just a kid, and he must have been in his 40s or 50s, but he wore this full chef uniform, and the kitchen was like 90 to 110 degrees Ooh. Perpetually mm-hmm. all the time. Or at least that's what it seemed like to me. And he had some kind of like skin reaction that he had like hives from his head down to his toe. Mm-hmm. And he was just, he was this like salty, Vietnam veteran who was just, we would talk about all kinds of stuff, but it was really like I learned about life, just from the people in the kitchen and in the restaurant, but a pivotal experience to me that I'd like to tell the story of. You'd go in there and the dishes would be to the ceiling. And they'd be, and I'd be like working. I'd be like, man, I'm really doing a great job. And the owner pulled me out one time. He right outside the kitchen was this bar, and he'd sit at the bar. And I can't even remember his first name, but his last name was Cassidy. It was his place. But and I thought he was going to tell me what a great job I was doing. And it turned into, hey, Rich, I know you're thinking you're doing well, but you really need to hurry it up. and I literally felt that I was working the fastest mm-hmm. that I could and learned that the expectation was past that.
Mm.
And that was like mind blowing to me. I remember having to be like, where am I going to get more speed? But I did.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And I don't, I just saw the restaurant as a tough environment. And it was about dealing with reality, because if you didn't get it done, you didn't get it done, and everybody knew it. And it was a great place to learn how to work. And my second memory is much the same, that I worked in a dairy and I was the dishwasher again, and literally the pots and pans to the ceiling, and that'd be my job. And I remember they tried to hire people alongside of me, and. This one time, this person came in and she looked at the pots and pans and she cried. And I was like, look, it's going to be okay. just watch me do it. And people would cycle through there and they wouldn't come back.
Hmm.
And I learned, some people would do this work and some people wouldn't. But like you just like work one pot at a time. And you.
Well, I feel like that just applies to everything. Like it applies to, everything you've done at CCA applies to counseling,
I need you to close.
Sorry. No, it,
We'll keep that correction in, Gary. That's part of the real.
Yeah, that's why. But it is like it's just all those interactions, that constant having to go. Even, you know, you said it's real. It's reality. Like people see, you know, during, because you worked there during COVID, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, talk about learning how to adapt. You cannot envision the amount of problems you're going to have. Like every, you solve one, you've got four more. Like you don't think things just would happen that you never expected. And you just had to constantly, like, you know, the day goes on, people still want what they want. You gotta do what you gotta do. Mm-hmm. You gotta push forward. And I always thought just even dealing with customers and stuff, in a way, I translate that into counseling too, in a way, like, what does this person need? You know, if I'm a server and you come and sit, you know, and you and your wife are on your first date, you're not married yet.
Yeah.
You probably don't want me to sit there and chat you up and tell you my life story and ask y'all and like just, you know, sit down beside you and say, hey, what are you, all that stuff. And not everybody gets that. Some servers, like, that's what they do every time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what they should be doing every time. Now, maybe there is a guest that comes in that wants that, like that comes in and wants to connect with the server and wants to hear their life story and wants to be chatted up. But being able to figure out, okay, this guy's looks like he's on a first date. You know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to make sure he has a really nice time. I'm going to make sure the food's good. I'm going to make sure his water's always full. I'm going to make sure he doesn't need anything. And, you know, anything I can do to make his experience just a little bit more comfortable or a little less stressful, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so much about relationship and reading people. And, you know, to me, like when somebody comes into CCA, like ushering them, you know, through and making them feel comfortable, being a servant.
Right.
You know, and that's what I consider counselors to be, like we serve people, you know, and yeah, I see sometimes people in these professional roles have difficulty with that.
Mm-hmm.
If you worked at a restaurant, you learned all those things.
Yeah. We were listening to a podcast the other day and it was talking about, like, what does it look like if God were fill in the blank, serving tables, you know, counseling, making art, you know,
kingdom representative.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was all about how, you know, at every vocation, you know, not everybody has to be a minister or a therapist, or, you know, how can, whatever you're doing, you need to make sure you're being God's representative in that space.
Yeah,
for sure.
How does God, you know, if you're washing dishes, you know, what does it look like if God's washing dishes? Or, if, right. You know, somebody who's embodies a spirit, of, you know.
Took up that role.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that is interesting. So all three of us have done.
It's just cool. I think it helps. Makes you learn how to work hard.
Definitely. I would not argue with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Chick-fil-A and Olive Garden. And, you know, I have, like, all my teenage years, at least. And I think I was in the college halfway before I departed.
Well, what? When did you start working? You tell people when people look at you like,
yeah.
Wait, how old are you? What? When did you start working?
Yeah, I worked at Chick-fil-A for 15 years.
And how old are you?
I'm 26.
And you haven't. and you quit working there when?
Last year.
Okay, so.
So we're like, OSHA, don't be listening to this.
No. No, it was part of my family business, so rules didn't apply. So.
Yeah, that's good. We believe in family businesses.
Yeah.
You start working early.
Mm-hmm.
So from the time that you were 11, yep. Like formally you were on site.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. I think it's so cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. So that totally explains how you made it to intake supervisor, and you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, so we have this format today. You know, we don't have a format, but you know, I knew that you wanted to talk about. Sorry, Alex. The you know, you have an interest in creativity, and how that can take a hold of our lives, and that has something to do with counseling.
Mm-hmm.
It's psychological, and it has to do with faith. So tell me about this. What are you thinking?
Yeah, well, I feel like we were originally thinking about the topic, you know, we hosted a worship night not too long ago.
Yeah. And we have a worship night at CCA, mm-hmm. and we encourage our counselors to come, and they can bring their family members, and mm-hmm. we would worship together as a company.
Yeah, and so we were really, and we led, and we're thinking about worship and what that looks like, creativity in that space, and I know that just start, you know, thinking of all these different almost rabbit trail ideas from that, but like, you know, creativity comes from God, we give it back to God, and what does that look like for different people?
And that's kind of how did we connect? I was trying to think about that, like, because we talked a bit about this, but in terms of the creativity, and especially like, you know, with that mental health aspect, it just feels, you know, God is a creator, and it feels really good to create, like to just start having these ideas, and especially when you work with somebody and you just build off things. I remember what it was, but there was something where I think I told her, I was like, I'm really good at starting ideas. And she's like, that's good. I'm really good at finishing them. I was like, okay, so let's see where this goes. And it's crazy how it's kind of played out where I'll just be like, you know, we'll be mid shift. And I'm like, Isabel, I just had this random crazy thought pop in my head. What do you think about this? And she's like, oh my gosh, that's really cool. Give me, you know, 5 minutes later, she goes, okay, this is cool. What if we take it this way? And I'm like, this is great. This is perfect. Like, I would never, you know, I made it so far, and she's able to just take it the rest of the way. And it winds up being like this. It's just energizing. Is really the, I think that's the best way I can describe it. Like, I don't know. I leave just like, anytime we just have a little brainstorming session, I just leave amped up. It's almost like you ever wake up in the middle of the night and you just, I don't know, whatever's going on, you just feel like you've solved 28 problems in your life and you need to get up and write them down or something.
It's like every morning at between 3 and 5
o'clock. Is it really? No, that's
for me anyway. I don't know about you all.
No, that's exactly what it is. What are we, 3 a.m. there? We'll occasionally have, like, I'll wake up to an email and it'll say random 3 a.m. thought. I had this cool idea. What do you think about this?
Yeah. And my alarm clock is set for 5:15 on my phone. And then somehow all the clocks in the bedroom are like 10 minutes ahead of that. So I always wake up at the, you know, 10 minutes ahead of time. And I'm like, oh, I could sleep for 5 more minutes. And then I start thinking about everything, that the problems that will be solved.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the sleep is over. It's like, no, I better get up. So, yeah. So it's energizing.
It is energizing. And there's a neurological component to that where, again, I think it all comes back to us being created in God's image, like everything, all of our, you know, I try and think of what somebody's interested in, and at its purest form is that part of God's image, you know, because there's things we can take that are, you know, part of God's image, but then have been, you know, distorted by the world, and we kind of make them very ungodly. But again, if you can get to the root of that, and okay, what is the basic, you know, like why are we interested in creation? Why are we interested in things that are beautiful? Why are we interested in adventure, risk taking? Why do people enjoy, you know, suspenseful movies? What, you know, there's a, because some, you know, you might hear, well, you know, these, whatever you're watching, that's not a very Christian thing to watch. Okay, maybe that's true. But is there, in its purest form, is there a reason that, you know, humans in general are attracted to those type of things? Like, I love thinking about just, and we've talked about this, I think we had a whole conversation about this on intake one day, is just the different, like, what type of shows are out there, you know? Think of how many restoration shows are out there. Mm-hmm. People love restoration. People love do-it-yourself stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, it's filled with that. You know, how can we turn this beat up thing into something that's beautiful? How can we, I know a lot of people love The Amazing Race. Like, what about that is part of God's character? I don't know. That winds up being a conversation a lot.
Well, you know, and I was trying to look for the place where it says that we're made in God's image. Mm-hmm. You know, and But I turned to Genesis 1 and, you know, all the things that are created. And, you know, so, you know, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. You know, Genesis 1:1. Now, Alex, find a place where in you know, where it says we're made in God's image, and put that up on the screen for us. Okay. We were talking before about how you know, when you get to create, you know, and that, you know, we're you know, in some ways, you know, a reflection of God, you know, and so we have some ability to create where God is the ultimate creator. Mm-hmm. You know, so you see, like, right from the beginning of what we know, God was engaging, you know, this formless and void and dark, you know, chaotic, you know, thing. And you know, but to me, you know, before we were talking about, like, being bored.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was just there's this thing that we look at our lives, we look at our jobs, look at our relationships, what, you know, whatever it be, and you see nothing. Like, it's formless and void.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, in that is not the way God sees it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is not the heart of faith. You know, and so you know, I remember these times in my life. It's sort of depressing. You know, and I often say Western PA, the weather in Western PA in the wintertime, you know, it can grind you down and to a place where you have to build yourself back up again, and people will come here. And you know, just you could look out into the weather and be like, blah, there's nothing out here for me today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and creativity is being able to see things that are formless and void and seeing the possibility in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it, to me, it's like the end of depression. You know, it dispels anxiety, and every, you know, label that branches out from there. Yeah, this is a core topic of things that, you know, that we have to embrace life like God embraces life.
Hmm.
You know, and so, you know, so 1:27 in Genesis, God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female. He created them. You know, you know, I don't want to get too theological about it, but it means, you know, to, you know, in some sense, that God gives us the ability to be creative, and so we should be,
mm-hmm.
you know, and when we do, that you know, that boredom, which is the rejection of all possibility, and saying there's nothing there for me, you know, on the other side of that is being energized, hopeful.
That's a neat way to put that, rejection of all possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like that.
And, you know, so I enjoyed the conversation we had earlier, you know, but you see me, you know, working within groups of people,
mm-hmm.
all of the time. And we talk about part of being a company of mm-hmm. counselors, part of being the church. You know, you're a group of people, you know, gathered in the name of Christ, mm-hmm. and saying, you know, we believe that God can make something out of this.
Yeah.
You know, and seeing the possibility. So there is no relationship that we're not interested in. You know, there's no opportunity that we want to pass on. And you know, boredom is the rejecting, you know, the rejection of creativity to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is saying that, yeah, it's, nothing is possible with this. You get into rejecting people. Rejecting your life.
I say that sounds like something in a, you know, marriage that's going down the drain. You know, I see no possibility. You know, I'm bored with my marriage. But then if you take it to what you said right there, being bored with your marriage means you reject any possibility of a future or of a creativity of.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and to me, you know, that is part of the brokenness of the world. It's very tempting that we could give up. And yeah, so we talk about things like synergy, like in a group of people, the sum of the parts, you know, are greater, you know, there's this extra that nobody could produce on their own. And, you know, when people come together and believe in that, set the standard for that, achieve it, amazing things happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, we believe that that kind of engagement, you know, and sometimes we give it cheap terms like working in teams or, yeah, but, you know, I like that.
Yeah. It's fun working in teams, especially in a field that is typically isolated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you were telling about that earlier.
Yeah.
Sorry, you have something you want to say.
Well, no, I was just thinking about, you know, when we talk about creativity, inevitably the response is, well, I'm just not creative, right? Someone will say, like, I just don't have that. And I think that, you know, we have a lot of people have a narrow view maybe of what creativity, like it has to be art or it has to be music or whatever. But, you know, when you think about the church and how we're supposed to function as a group of people, right? There's different gifts, there's different roles, right? Like your hand and I'm a foot, you know, like different things that make the body of Christ work. And I think that to say like, I'm not creative or I don't have this makes me not able to be in those spaces is a really dangerous kind of way of thinking.
Yeah, it's minimizing or denying the possibility. And so when I hear that there's a worship night at CCA, when I am on my way to meet with the church on any given Sunday, I have to accept that God has amazing things planned and that we could be a part of that. And this could be it, you know, and to believe in that. And so I wonder, like, when we're setting something like that, what will happen? You know, and I want to find out, you know, and I want to believe that it might not be today, you know, but eventually, you know, it's going to happen, you know, because God is engaging that. And he's allowed us to be with that, to make the choice, you know, to be part of his creation. And so, yeah, like I get really energized about that. and I really believe, you know, I see things like that are discouraging. You know, we will have people who will get stuck and they'll be like, I'm not getting anything out of this. Yeah, but even like in our work teams, you know, so like when you join CCA as a counselor or you're part of the administrative staff or anybody who works here, you're really part of what we're building up that people can come to. And so we're in this meeting and we're I'm trying to develop this logo, you know, for a new project that we've talked about on the podcast, but I don't know if I have to get into the details of that as much as, you know, you were in that meeting and I was like, oh, you know, I don't know what this is going to be like. And all of a sudden you like step forward. I did not know you were an artist, but you're like, here, I drew it on the back of a napkin. And I'm like, wow, like that is, and one of the things that really, you know, I've artists in my family and I've often described it as, you know, they could like come into this building and from what they could get here, they could build like a superstructure castle in the back and be like, look, I built this castle in my church. And I'm like, how did you do that? It would be a million years, you know, even before I could draw that on the napkin. Mm-hmm. But now that I have that, you know, what I can do has been, you know, transformed and moved forward like light years just in that meeting. I really respect that. You know, because that, you know, is what happens when that group of people comes together. Mm-hmm. And as a director of the company, and we're, you know, again, we were talking about this. yeah, I've learned to love that because I could say, like, now I know what this person could do, and this person, if we put these people together, it's going to happen. And it's just really, you know, building relationships like that to learn. And again, I think that part of that, you know, because, you know, at the foundation, our hope is that involves the power of God, you know, that he is leading us. And in the church, you know, in tradition, we know that that's true, that he will lead the church. And we can be a part of that. But when that comes together, there'll be amazing transformative things that will happen. Yeah.
And I'd say people need to step out in faith in those mm-hmm. times. You know, that I'm sure that was a little scary drawing. So what, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, were you nervous drawing something on a napkin and like, okay, I've never, so, you know, this is my boss, this is a director of CCA. I've never told him I can draw. He's talking about this thing. I can see it. I can draw it. I could give it to him. But what if, you know, and part of being creative is also, you know, that makes people mm-hmm. anxious too, because, you know, the more creative you are, usually the more things you can think of that could also go wrong. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think a lot of people get very nervous. You know, this is something we've been talking about in my church a lot recently, is you have, you know, everybody's got a talent. Like, we have a gift. God didn't mm-hmm. make somebody that is not useful. Like, it just doesn't, it didn't happen. And so not only finding out what that is, but being obedient and faithful and just being bold enough to step out and be like, you know what? This is, and it kind of goes along with that, how creating things is also an act of worship mm-hmm. and needing to put aside the fear of what somebody else might think of it. And just, you know what, this might be what you need. This is my offering mm-hmm. to you. And I hope you appreciate it, which clearly you did. But mm-hmm. in that reinforces it. I think that builds people up. And, you know, I love encouraging people. We talk about this a lot. I'm sorry, I keep saying we talk about this because we do.
We were talking before the podcast. We're supposed to be in here talking, but that was okay. That was, a lot of ideas came out of that.
We just, you know, we love people. I love people. I love getting people excited about something that they're passionate about. And that, I think that's mm-hmm. when you find people's gifts and talents. Like, if you love rocks. I don't know anything about rocks. I'm not interested in rocks. But if you love rocks and you're really excited about rocks, I feel like Alex is kind of like this too. Like, Alex, if you get excited about something, like, you're going to get me, like, I'm going to be like, I don't know what you're talking about, man, but I love it. I'm in. Let's go. Take me on this ride. Teach me rocks.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
But anyway, I can't remember why I even said that. Just, it was cool that, like, wouldn't you say that even right there, you know, to have that vision and like what you said about how amazing things are going to happen, that takes people to have that faith to step out, put themselves out there just a mm-hmm. little bit and say, you know what, I'm going to be a little bit vulnerable here, and I'm going to show you, one of my gifts. And I'm, mm-hmm. and I'm just going to pray that God uses this and that you don't reject me or tell me this is stupid and not what you think it should be, because that's mm-hmm. I think that's the fear people have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, for me, like, the creativity involves people, and, you know, so it can't be my ideas. And we try to cultivate that environment here where people will be encouraged to put out ideas, and it can't be a scary thing. You know, especially, you know, I think of, you know, being a younger counselor or working, you know, when I was younger in an organization and just being like, I don't even know if these people want me to talk, you know? And, so I don't know how people feel now, you know, but when you're in a room of 12, 15 people, you know, can you say something or put forth an idea? I try to really let everybody know that's what we're doing, you know? Mm-hmm. And the part that hurts is that sometimes as an individual, you want to see it happen a certain way. You know, but like, say, for instance, you know, you took that drawing, and then Gary, that's the drawing that you got, and it came back, and there was a couple people drawing things, and you know, we had a way to bring that together because it was ideas from both images plus what was on the napkin, and I was like, this is super cool, but we have to present that in January to the group Concepts of Truth, and. I hope that they'll like it. You know, and probably what will happen is that in that group, they're going to continue to create that mm-hmm. that vision for where we're going.
It is, and that's, you know, even the same thing as like handing the napkin over. It's like you're handing, you know, okay, now this is the collective CCA napkin we're passing off to you guys. We hope you like it.
So we have to trust each other. Mm-hmm. And to get anywhere, you eventually have to do that. And so one of the things that I feel like I'm always doing, you know, at CCA is encouraging people to trust and to move from an individual to a group, because I've realized that in the church as an individual, there is this thing about me and God that is sacred and true, and that is very important, you know, our personal relationship. Yeah, but then there's others, you know, love God, love others. And so right after that, in God's plan is people. Mm-hmm. You know, and for that, if you don't get that part of it, you know, you will miss out on everything that God has planned. Mm-hmm. And so counselors love to be alone. They love to be, it's me and the client. They love to be in individual counseling. They love to be in solo private practices. And I've learned to reject that. You know, we're a group practice, you know, and we lift up that value, you know, because, you know, we think of the church and like we're never alone. Like we're working with other people. And so that's a jump of trust to you know, ask people to, you know, commit to something like that and all the things that could happen, mm-hmm. you know, because you don't have control over the whole thing, mm-hmm. you know, but when you're on a team, like what we're describing that happened, you know, with the creation of that logo, would never have happened. I would not have done that in a million years. Yeah. You know? We also encourage clients to know that your endpoint isn't finding a great counselor and being in individual counseling for the rest of your life. That's not what we hope for people. So we have group counseling, and it's voluntary. You know, and talked a lot about it, but it, you know, we call that our transparency and accountability groups. You know, that will spur us on to growth, and so we call them TAG groups. But it's an intermediate step before people leave CCA and root themselves in a more creative and profound way in the church. And we want people along the way, you know, this is one of the things that are core to Christian counseling that makes it different than if you go to a secular counselor or you put your trust in that. That we want people to be inspired and energized by what God could do and how I could become connected to that in a church. And how I could learn through counseling how I've become disconnected from that. How I've given up hope on that. How I've become bored with it. Mm-hmm. You know, and to realize that that's part of how I'm stuck in my mind and in my heart, that I have these symptoms now. And so we have some very traditional components, but that's one of them, is moving from this individual mindset, because we're still individuals. We still have our personality. We're still who we are, our identity, you know, and that's the way God created us. Mm-hmm. You know, it's defined, but we get a more fuller sense of that through each other.
Yoking, I always think of yoking up. You know, what's that? I don't know if you want to pull that verse up. Though I think it was in Matthew.
Yes.
You know, take my yoke upon you. My burden is easy.
Yoke is easy, burden is light.
We should know these verses off by heart.
We should.
When we're talking here, we're very distracted.
But that's, you know, that's what getting in that team does. Like, I can't.
So Matthew 11:28-30. If we could have that up on the screen.
That's what a TAG group does. It gives you other people to yoke up with. I mean, it's, you know.
Is that it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So come to me, all who look. This is, I want the NASB. Can I have that?
Okay.
Not the Revised Standard Version.
All right. We'll be back.
Please. Sorry, I'm very, very picky on. We probably could have kept that, but
would you say like your boldness and your faith and like having somebody there with you to, you know, just to,
there we are,
to carry the burden.
So Matthew 11:29-30, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble at heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke, and that's what you were referring to, my yoke is comfortable and my burden is light. Or, you know, in some versions it says my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And so, in this metaphor, and I learned this in church the other day, the imagery is that God is we're yoked to God, and that God is pulling, and we are attached to that yoke, pulling also. But when He's pulling, and we're doing that work with Him, that burden is no longer the kind of burden like we were trying to pull it with two people. You know, if you think of a big, powerful, two oxes, but one was bigger than the other, that first ox that's more powerful is really pulling it. You know, and that's what Jesus is inviting us into. And it does, you know, that to me is part of creativity, because what He's calling us to do does not seem like a light burden. It does not seem comfortable. You know, and He's saying, trust me, you know, you'll learn, you know, have faith.
I think the other thing that, you know, as we talk about creativity that comes up, at least for me, is this idea of seeing God as like the ultimate creator, reflecting on His creation, and it should induce this like awe or wonder in who He is, right? You can look up like at the heavens, you can look at the stars and like the vastness of creation down to like the smallest cell in our body and just see how creative He is and see how much He cares for us. And I think that inevitably that leads to that surrender that you're talking about. Like, right? One of my favorite verses is like, if He cares for the grass of the field, like how much more, right, does He care for you? And so as we're looking and reflecting on who God is and His greatness, yeah, like, of course, I want Him to be leading.
I think that's part of that. The awe, like, makes you feel small, but not in an insignificant way. It makes you feel like, I've nodded, like, I have to surrender. Like, look at, you know, those, I love those videos where, I know you gave me the one analogy, the golf ball. But, you know, if you, we think we're, it's easy to get stuck in, like, we're in this room. Okay, well, yeah, okay, there's a Greensburg and there's Pennsylvania and this. But then it just, you don't, like, we forget how small we are. And that, what's that guy's name, Louis
Giglio.
Yeah, but, you know,
Giglio. A golf ball.
It's really mind-blowing to just keep zooming out. Mm-hmm. And then you zoom out some more, and you zoom out some more, and you zoom out some more, and you realize, like, it's, you know, like if you took a teaspoon of water and dropped it in the ocean, and emptied the oceans and put a teaspoon of water in the oceans, like, that's, I don't even know if we're quite that much water compared to the whole ocean, if that's the, you know, the universe, everything that God's created. I mean, and it's, you just start thinking of it and you get, it's kind of overwhelming, but if you look at it with a sense of awe, you start going, okay, I really can't, like, I do need to surrender. Like, this is, I'm just, you know, use me.
Yeah.
Use me. And with working with other people, it makes that a lot easier. Like, we've gotten so much more done working together than we ever would have. And even little things, you feel bolder when you have somebody with you. Because it's like, well, you know, if this doesn't go well, I'll see you at the unemployment line. You know,
fail.
Like, I texted, we had, you know, talking about the, I guess this will come out later, like the Santa promo thing for the Intake Christmas party. I texted you asking you, and I don't, if it wasn't her and I working on that together, I don't think I would have ever texted you. But because it was like, well, if he hates my idea, it's our idea. So
you can blame it on this.
So he hates it 50% less, or I would, you know, Isabel wanted me to text you this. But I did, you know, so just little things like that, it just makes you a little bit bolder. Like, and sure, you know, and sure enough, you said, hey, that's a great idea, let's do it. But those are things that I think when people are isolated, you get stuck in your loop of, well, that's not a good idea. But when you have somebody else, and I'm like, hey, Isabel, I was thinking about this. And she goes, what? That's so cool. I was thinking something similar the other day. Let's, you know, let's figure this thing out. Let's get going.
Christian Counseling Associates is ready to serve you, providing a wide range of counseling services. Christian counseling is accessible to everyone. We serve both Christians who want their faith integrated into the counseling process or those holding any beliefs or attitudes toward spirituality. With many years of counseling experience, our counselors are professional, licensed, highly trained, and rooted in their commitment to their church and communities. CCA is able to provide a full range of clinical counseling services. For more information, visit our website at www.ccawpa.com. Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's part of the creativity, you know, and again, in God's design, you know, bringing believers together, you know, and committing to that. Yeah, I find myself doing things at CCA that I never would have done, like be in a Santa Claus suit to the staff. Joking around, I mean, there's professional things that I've done because of people in my life here at CCA. And before that, you know, how I really trusted to give myself over to that, because you do have to give up things. Like, again, the way I wanted it to be. But those people were in my life leading me to things. And I had to trust that that was God's will, that that was God's direction for my life. And sometimes it's tough. You mm-hmm. can't see it. You know, you have to trust. And sometimes you disagree with the direction the group is going in. You know, and there's nothing you can do about it. You know, it's much, much more difficult than if you're on your own. You know, that's easy. You know, and that's where Jesus flips this over and says, you know, you need to learn from me. You know, what I'm asking you to do, it seems tough. You know, but at the heart of me, I am kind, gentle, humble, and you'll find rest here. And he means it. You know, this is, you know, doing it his way, you know, will involve people, and we have to trust in that, and we'll be at peace. And so, yeah, I think of, you know, here at CCA, you know, we're coming into the holiday season, you know, so it's, by the time you'll see this, probably Thanksgiving will be over, but it's a week before Thanksgiving, and then we're going to go into Christmas, and we have these Christmas parties. I'm going to promote that to our staff by dressing up as Santa Claus, and you've prepared a script for me to say, and it'll be really creative and fun. We're inspiring people to go a certain direction. We believe that when we, you know, one of the things that God is calling us to do is to celebrate these important days. You know, that is a guaranteed way that we can say to the world that Jesus is Lord and Savior. And, you know, we do that within our families. Here in December, you know, we will creatively motivate people in their counseling sessions to lift that up in their lives. And we'll do that with each other as a company. We get to do that in church. And we can be in a place in our lives, again, where we're bored with it. It doesn't mean anything. Like, I'm doing this because I have to, or it's a date on the schedule. And then we miss the point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. That when you get to the heart of this, these are the opportunities of our lives. You know, and they're fleeting. You know, we don't get these chances forever. You know, and going back to, to God as the perfect creator, you know, He engages that, and so could we.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this there's a lot in this, it's very philosophical, but it's very much a part of the faith, and I believe it's part of counseling. You know, you have to be creative, or open your heart to be creative about what this intervention can do in your life. You know, what seeing a counselor could do. What's going to happen when you open your heart to another person. And that can be tough for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with our counselors, there's a whole bunch of stuff that comes along, opportunities that you can engage here that you're not going to get in other places.
That is true. Sometimes people pay you to write jingles. No, but it's true.
Ben writes jingles for us.
There is an it's just an incredible situation to just flourish in whatever possible way you can imagine.
Yeah.
Truthfully, that's the way I see it.
Yeah. I mean, that's what's going to happen. Like when we live our lives in the church, when we do something in the name of Jesus Christ with a collection of people. So, you know, I definitely see that and have pursued that in my life. And once again, we want our clients to embrace that. So I would start out in the Christmas season. You know, what does that mean to embrace with your family for real this time? You know, to make that a priority. And maybe that's part of why people need to be here in December, you know, because they're stuck and they, you know, they're just not there. If we're to be honest, you know, we're not waking up at 5 o'clock saying, man, today could be it. I mean, this could really be the amazing moment.
Yeah. 5 a.m. every day should be, this is the day. This is the big day. What's the old, this is the day that the Lord has made.
This is the day. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the day. You know,
Ben, you were supposed to bring your guitar
I'm
today,
sorry.
Weren't you? And Isabel, you play instruments too? What did
she's
you play?
She's a piano player and a singer, and she killed it.
Yeah. So you played the piano and sang at the worship night?
I did.
And you played the guitar?
Yes. And hopefully, yeah, it was fun. We were super nervous. So hopefully that's inspiration to be bold and step out if you have some sort of anything. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay to be a little nervous about it.
Well, I hope you'll do that.
It was fun. We had a blast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because there'll be a time where you're not nervous about it anymore.
If
you keep on doing it.
I'm still nervous. I lead praise and worship at church, and I'm still nervous every Sunday.
Oh, wow.
I don't know why.
Okay.
I don't know.
No, that makes sense to me. I'm a little nervous every time I do something.
but it was a really cool, and we even talked about... you know, because afterwards we were trying to reflect, like, what went well, what didn't go well, what do we, you know, what can we improve upon? One of the things we talked about was what type of space should we create for people to worship? And then we started talking about the ways we worship. And it's interesting because we're, you know, in a lot of ways, she and I are very similar, but then there's other ways where we're totally opposite. You know, you love to be, tell me if I'm wrong. You love to be like, you really enjoy, you enjoy singing. You love standing up. Mm-hmm. You like, you know.
Yeah. I find a lot of joy in like the words reflecting on, you know, what I'm saying to God in a worship space.
Cause you asked me, you said, what type of worship would you prefer? Like what's my thing? And I was thinking about that. I'm like, you know, my favorite growing up was sitting there listening to a choir. I don't particularly care to sing. I don't know if that's wrong. I don't know, but I do. Like, I love sitting there just kind of appreciating whatever somebody else is doing. I love a big choir. I used to love when this lady would sing O Holy Night every year for Christmas. And it wasn't that I didn't want to sing. I was just so happy to just full of joy sitting there just watching and listening to her sing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I was thinking, you know, if I would have gone to worship night, I would have been happy just sitting down and just watching the whole thing. Just be like, man, that's cool. These people have some awesome gifts. Like, let's just soak it in. Whereas somebody else would want to be up singing, dancing, whatever it is. And it's just kind of interesting how different people are in their spaces.
Yeah. And I think in the same way of like creativity, right? Like, we worship different ways, but God is going to meet us in those spaces, right? So like, God might speak to me very differently than he would speak to somebody else, using kind of that as a basis for that.
I think during the holidays, you know, just watching things, you know, just going to the church services and seeing what they set out their best, you know, in those celebrations. But what's going to happen in those spaces? And yeah, if you want to talk about creativity, you know, definitely though, engaging that, you know, I like to sing in the choir.
Loveless. The bell choir? Do you guys have a bell choir at your church ever?
You know, I've never done that, but I've become very interested
you
in...
You weren't on the bell choir at First Church?
Did you watch him though? I was never on one.
I never played the bells. maybe.
That was a big deal back at... than your first church.
I've been at some churches, you know, the chime bells.
Oh, I love them. Never did it myself, but I used, that was one of my favorite. Anytime I saw the, at one of my churches, they were called the Drummond Ringers. And anytime I saw on the little thing, the Drummond Ringers were coming, I was like, yes, Drummond Ringers.
They used to do that in the church that we're in now, but they stopped doing it. Mm. And but those were things that anybody could do if you just practiced, you know. Mm-hmm. And I've begun to look at the old hymns, and I like all kinds of music, but the words in there, and then singing the parts. Mm. And so it's harder to me, like in the modern worship music, to sing the parts, but to practice that, you know, it's become like a thing that I do every week now. Cause I'm,
that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm an old hymn guy. I like, that's what I love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't play any instruments. So, but like, yeah, I could do that. And, I'm on the, like we have an early traditional choir.
Mm.
And, that's become, you know, how I spend some of my extra time.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. But then we have people in our, you know, Sarah in our family, she's like a musical genius. She's had a good run. She's gotten the lead in the play these last couple of years. Always singing, always playing the piano, can play three other instruments, that kind of stuff. So, you know, that's, you could have those kind of things in your life. And I think, I mean, if we're going to, there's so much in this topic that sort of gets into psychology, but I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of going back to those tag groups, like, you know, if you think about like us doing that together and saying like that's a model of the church. But if you look at some of the greatest minds in secular psychology, like if you look at Irving Lom and Carl Rogers, at the end of their career, they would only do groups because they realized how beneficial that was for clients to be in a process group, to you know, live out that accountability in those types of groups, and you get the most, you know, personal growth out of those items. And I mean, that's been lost kind of in, you know, 2023, but in the 90s when those contributors to psychology were big, that was, you know, a major part of their contribution was that type of counseling.
Yeah, you know, to expand what you said, the modern field of psychology is very, you know, one-dimensional, and it is, in my opinion, done for profit. That's what we're interested in doing most often, is to make money. Well, now in this field, you got to be careful though, because you're dealing with human lives and people who are suffering, and so, you know, here, you know, we value, you know, what is best for the client. And so we look at the best of psychology. Carl Rogers, you know, he would talk about B values. Now, this is like back in the chapter that you don't have to memorize for the test and read, you know, but he taught, you know, and Maslow, which he's sort of lumped in with, they talked a lot about creativity. Mm. And their theory was that's part of why people go crazy, is because they disconnect from the inspiration of life and how that changes the way that you think and believe, like learning how to appreciate things like beauty. And so if I go to an art gallery and I look at a beautiful painting, I'm not wasting my time. If we teach the kids how to sing Bible songs from the time that they know how to think, you know, and we spend time, you know, in art classes, we're you know, there's something very, very important, you know. And so when it comes time for me to lose my mind, and like think of all the forms of how that could happen, like I'm so angry, I want to tear somebody apart. It's the most simplest thing that I could do in reaction to something that happens to me. It's, you know, and people get killed. Like if I know how to appreciate, you know, the true value in somebody who's my enemy, you know, that won't happen. You know, that's what Carl Rogers was into, and he said, like, and if you do not learn how to pursue those higher order things, we all know that Maslow, like hierarchy of needs, you know, the pyramid, you know, these B values, you know, we're so very important that people, you know, learn how to appreciate. And so when you get into groups, like we've had people who've fallen into the mainstream of counseling, which is the most profitable thing I can do is have you in an individual session. You know, it's the easiest, you know, forgive the folks out there who are listening. What are you talking about? You know, but we really want you to know that, you know, this part, this higher order in recovering from whatever brought you to counseling, it could even be marital problems, you know, things that you wouldn't think of, like, what's this group going to do for me? You learn how to appreciate other people's problems at least as much as your own. And that is a big part of getting your mind right. Carl Rogers and the greats of providing the treatment systems that we've had in the past knew that. They studied it, researched it. And the sad thing is that there is really no motivation to pursue those things in a lot of places in the treatment delivery systems now.
Well, yeah, and I would think just to that point, like we're talking about, like the insurance companies and things like that, and the rise of like just symptom reduction. And the insurance companies come along and say, you know, we have to protect the consumer. We need something that's going to be, you know, quick and effective. And you know, after a while, you start to realize that they've, in that effort to protect the consumer, that they've kind of overwritten the. What, you know, things like group counseling can do for people, because it's not as you know, here's these 12 steps, here's these, it's not as quick and measurable as maybe an individual session, if you track individual sessions over like 12 sessions, something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
And we reference Yalom a lot.
Yeah.
You know, who's really, he's a genius in the field, and looks at the research and how artificial some of that stuff is measured, because we can develop this measurement in 12 sessions and say, oh, you know, we really got to a place, a great place with your symptom.
Yeah.
You know, our people are trained, you know, throughout everything that we do, and, you know, so tell me if this sounds familiar, in the contextual behavioral sciences. That's the core of our, you know, we have theological training, and then we have psychological training, and the psychological branch is in contextual behavioral science. It is a researched way of helping people resolve their issues. That says that, you know, that is well demonstrated in the research. Yalom and the people who are worth their salt in this, if I can say it that way, that if you go the path of symptom reduction with people, it's like a yo-yo. And so you can get them out so far to say, I'm not experiencing this symptom anymore, and say, the study's done. But 6 weeks from there, that slingshot's back, and the symptom is worse than when they first started out. And if you graph that, you see this up-down, you know, kind of graph that the symptom reduction folks don't want to talk about. They won't reference those studies. But the true scientists in this field look at all the studies, and you don't reject them because they're not saying what you want them to say. And for that, symptom reduction is a very unrealistic way of handling your problems. You know, so for that, you know, these, you know, I don't know where to go from. Well, I'm sort of losing my train of thought.
And Irvin Lom's a good point too, is because he was really into existential psychotherapy, which, yeah, you know, goes along to what Ben was talking about, which was, you know, at some point you have to realize how small your existence is, mm-hmm, and surrender yourself to something something bigger, a bigger purpose, and develop meaning in your life in order to be, mm-hmm, and we talk about that in the therapy we do, to be flexible to things that happen in your life.
It's, you know, it's more creative. It's more, you know, expanding somebody's, you know, view of whatever problem that they got stuck in, whether it's depression, anxiety, addiction, marital problems, and learning how to face your life and appreciate it again.
Does it ever frustrate you having to think about, like, symptom reduction and justifying doing insurance and all this stuff?
Well, you know, with insurance companies, and I've just been exploring this.
Sorry, that's an odd question.
Some of the insurance companies do not value group therapy. And so it's probably a little bit too much to get into with the public, but I think the whole culture now is relying on mental health and symptom reduction, and so they are just willing to, like, that's what they're engaging. You know, so it's hard to get people's minds, especially even the counselors, their minds outside of that. And insurance companies can be the bad guy. We value our insurance companies because people would have a hard time investing, in getting help. But ultimately, there's bigger forces than the insurance company that seek to leverage those things, because the slingshot that is in the study of anything, like, if you're engaging a form of treatment that is geared to make you feel better, what you're engaging is a lifetime of therapy. And we have seen people in counseling. I've been in practice now 27 years, and it's scary to think that, but I've seen people spend their whole lives in counseling. It was never meant to be that way. But it is the most profitable way. Here we will move you to something significant and impactful. And if you can get there, the gains that you make in growth are sustainable and more permanent. We all have times in our life where we fall back to some kind of habit or something, but that's part of the creativity is to be able to see where things can go. And not make it about smaller, insignificant things. Like, whether I feel good or bad in a moment, I need to have my mind set on more valuable things. And so counseling should encourage us to do that. And in God's design, what we're walking alongside people in this Christian life, I believe that's there for us to see. So there's a lot of things we just got to watch out for, you look back into these theorists like Carl Rogers and even Maslow, like, I wouldn't completely agree with them, in their humanistic philosophy. They lifted up the values of creativity, and how you'd find that in treatment. And it was, they were really great people, in this field that probably would have been rejected today. Because what they're proposing is not the pathway to, financial success. But we believe, here that, having strong, families, people who are strong in their emotional constitution is, doing our best for them is the best way. To have a career.
I think with all of that, we can, as we look at things that are successful in almost like a secular psychology field, I like to think that the Bible will back that up. God is our ultimate counselor, right? And so, like, as you were talking, two verses that kind of came to mind is, like, in this world you will have trouble, but what? But I've overcome the world, right? Mm. And so setting that almost like, this is my background for everything. And so if I can expand and, like, I have that hope, right? The here and now gets easier to work through. And then, when you think about the church in Acts, right? It says that the believers got together and had everything in common. Mm-hmm. And so as we think about a group.
That was a tag group.
Acts was just a tag group. how important is that, in our walk, in our relationships?
It's fun being around people who, like, what's the counseling term? Universality. Whenever you realize that, I'm not alone, feel, you're going through this too, we can share it. Mm-hmm. We can go through it together.
That's helps. A big deal.
It helps a ton. It helps with everything. Counseling, the whole idea of a team is just, we're better together. Mm-hmm. We're a lot better together.
Mm-hmm. If you can get the sense that you're not alone in your problems, that's a big deal here. And it really does help.
And we're not alone as counselors, it's because we always think that, well, I keep saying we, everything is me. you know, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm dealing with this thing and I got this client or this thing's going on and nobody would ever understand this, or this is the toughest situation, you know, and you just, you feel isolated. Then you get in group or you get to talking to somebody and you're like, oh, you get this. You had this. You've experienced this. You know what's going on. You know, there's, we can share, you know, you share, you help each other, you talk each other through even little frustrations. It's like, well, you know, that's understandable to be frustrated about this. Maybe think about it this way. And there was something I was frustrated about the other day. I think it was yesterday, and I told you, and you were like, well, that's understandable. But then you gave me some new little perspective, and I was like, huh.
This is on intake. the intake.
We work on intake.
This is like a discussion.
Listen, intake is, so I tell you, what Isabel started.
I know you
started,
guys work hard. I'm sorry.
She started a question of the day that has honestly opened up like this giant world of information and just conversation amongst everybody. Mm-hmm. Just these random questions of the day that wound up, they grow. Like they become, they honestly get kind of wild. Like just something little and mm-hmm. you learn so much about people. Like a lot about people. And it's weird feeling, it's not weird, but it's interesting that I feel so connected with people that I don't physically see, but mm-hmm. you just have so much, you help each other through things. You know, there's, especially with new people coming on, hey, what's this situation? What's this going on here? Boom, this is what you do. This is how you do this. This is, mm-hmm. we can help you with this. But then you mix that with, you mix the problem solving and the assistance along the way with the feeling of like being, you know, if it's a day when you've had 150 calls go through and everybody's like losing their mind, you know, it's like you just went to battle together. And then you also add the fact that these little moments in between moments of finding out interesting things about a different person and, mm-hmm. you know, different interests. What's this person doing? You know, what's this person doing this weekend, which might not necessarily always be like some big thing. But then when you find out like, oh, well, Jackie Boers is giving up her gold medal to from the diving competition and she's doing, then you're like, wait, what?
What?
hang on a second. Let's go back a second here. And then, you find out what people's like kids do and what, and it's, people are just fascinating.
Yeah.
And it's just hearing what people like, what they, you know, I'm just like telling what everybody's doing this weekend. Jordan, you know, hearing Jordan talk about, he's super excited. He's going to a Titanic exhibition this week. He's telling us all these facts about the Titanic. I'm like, dude, that's cool. Like, just because he loves it.
Well, one of the things that I'm learning today, you know, just, you know, hearing you talk about intake, you know, so our whole team of people that are on the phone lines are working together in teams. So you have a lot of connection there, mm-hmm. even though, you know, we don't all the time work in the same office, mm-hmm. so we're able to connect over that. It's obvious to me, though, you know, that's happening. That's really cool. And the, you know, if you could put John 16:33 up there on our screen, you know, you think about how, you know, one person can help out another. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we teach in our group counseling is to develop this empathy. And that's, you know, part of creativity is like learning how to care about things. You know, and so like I would care that somebody could help me and I could help them. You know, and that's what you're describing, like, you know, just finding out like what, like the people are doing things, and overcoming barriers. We solve problems every day.
Well, and I think, you know, the more comfortable, I don't even know if it, you and maybe you have, because all of your time at Chick-fil-A, like I feel like you learned a lot of this stuff, but the more you connect in that way, the more people will come to you with other things, like work-related things. When you're new, you know, you don't, I should know this. They taught me this in training. I don't want to ask this question. But once you've already engaged and mm-hmm. once you've told somebody some goofy story from your childhood that day, you're a lot more inclined to be like, okay, we've already, you know, we've shared so much already. I feel way more comfortable saying, hey, you know, hey, Ronnie, what's, am I supposed to, you know, how do I send the form? Which thing do I send to send the forms? And I think people interact way more that way, which is in a way also trains people and gets them more efficient way quicker. Like it's just neat how it all works together. Like by forming a relationship based on just caring and like understanding like that, it also fosters just growth within the you know, the role, like within the intake, you know, the job itself. You would think they have nothing to do with one another, but by building one, and it works. It just makes the other one go well.
Yeah, absolutely. So Isabel, you referenced the, you know, John chapter 16:33 says, "These things I have spoken to you, so in me you may have peace. In the world you'll have tribulation or trouble, but take courage. I've overcome the world." And that's the sense, you know, that we get with God, you know, that you know, in life we have the opportunity to overcome. We can get that sense, you know, and that kind of empathy with each other, you know, and so you get that on work teams. And you know, I'd like to see what you think about this, but you know, being counselors and knowing what people will experience during the holidays. And you know, I'd put this verse up there, and you know, just hope that somebody during the holidays would see this podcast and, you know, be able to believe that if they're in a place where, you know, the holidays aren't meaning too much to me, or maybe it's worse than that, I'm not only bored, but I'm hopeless, or I'm in despair, that they could tell that we know that this is real. And even if you're in a place where you can't believe this right now, you know, that whatever problem that you face, you should never give up, and that you could overcome that. You know, that's a promise that when we're with God, that we'll have that opportunity. To be fair, it doesn't guarantee it, you know. However, just to have that chance, you know, to do that. And if you're with us, you know, if you'll come to spend the holidays with us, and we'll be in the office. So call Ben, call Isabel. They'll answer the phone, and they'll talk to you. And you can come and meet with us, and maybe we would walk through a desperate time like that together. You know, that's what we want to do as counselors during the holiday. And I hope that people watching would really be able to empathize with us, know that that's real, know that we want to do that. You know, so you know, thinking about the holidays though, either just as a counselor, or you know, even as your families, like you know, what goes on for you during the holidays? You know, what do you think of when we say we have Christmas coming up? You know, what are your lives like?
I think we both love Christmas.
We do.
We've been talking about that a lot. I love Christmas.
But you never believed in Santa Claus.
What?
I didn't.
No.
I know.
There's the church, there's a division there that Santa Claus is okay, Santa Claus is not okay.
Yeah.
Did your parents just not think it was?
Sorry, Sean.
My dad was heartbroken when he found out.
Yeah.
So he was like, no, that was too much trauma for me. So he never.
We had to talk the other day. How long did you believe in?
Yeah.
That was an interesting one. Because I believed probably way too long.
Okay. Well, how old were you when?
I don't know the age, but my family like went. Well, and it's interesting because I don't have much you want to go into. So both of our families are kind of extreme, I guess. Is that a fair word?
That's fair.
In a good way.
In a good way.
In a very good way. And so I was surprised to hear that. But when she told me the story, that made sense. No, like my family went, it was my neighborhood. They would do things. You know, I remember there would always be jingle bells, like the sleigh bells outside of my window. I remember this very vividly one year, unless it's just a made up memory. But I hear sleigh bells. I go running into my parents' room to tell them that, you know, Santa was here. And they're both in, you know, so like they're in there. And then there would be, and I'm pretty sure it's my neighbor, Dwayne. He would come by with sleigh bells, and then he would put a ladder. He'd get up on the roof and walk on the roof. So you would hear him walking on the roof. We had like muddy reindeer footprints and leftover in the kitchen one year. Just all kinds of wild stuff. Like you name it. And I think everybody in the neighborhood would do that to help, you know, just because there's a lot of kids.
Yeah.
And so, you know, okay, then that would happen. Then my dad would leave, and then he'd go do the same thing at the Squire's house, and then he'd get on their roof. And so they'd all be sitting there freaking out, like, oh, my gosh, Santa's on the roof, Santa's on the roof, Santa's on the roof. Just kind of wild stuff.
That is pretty wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I've never heard of that.
It's a little, yeah. I mean,
like, you know, in modern neighborhoods, people doing that, but that's... Yeah, that's cool.
We had a little, yeah.
But I mean, if, you know, are we even allowed to, like, you know, just spoiler alert? I mean, are we allowed to talk about this? Is this okay?
I don't think, do we have listeners under 12?
Listeners under 12, please check out of this podcast. Yeah. If you've made it this far.
I even said, I don't even think, I'm probably 92% sure Santa's not real. I could be swayed the other way. I'm still open.
I mean, with the internet now, do kids even...
We've had theological discussions that I can't even go there, but there's a theological, you know, that the spirit, you know, that is in Christmas is real because it's, you know, the Holy Spirit. Hmm. And that was, you know, what was celebrated, you know, in Saint Nick, was not Saint Nicholas, but it was the Holy Spirit that drove Saint Nicholas to do what he did. Hmm. You know, and so that is still alive today and could, you know, make the world celebrate.
I always think of the Holy Spirit when I think of Christmas Carol, past, present, future. You know, that somebody can have redemption in what, you know, no matter what you've done in that amount of time, and the fact that God's timeless, doesn't exist in past, present, and future like we do, and the Holy Spirit can put it on somebody's heart that, you know. Yeah,
we have to be careful with this conversation, though, because...
Sorry.
We're gravitating towards Santa Claus is real as well.
See, I'm getting excited thinking about it.
How do you like that?
I know. No, my whole world's changed.
What I'm interested in is to tell me, you know, so did that make a difference? You know, because evangelical families, you know, especially, will decide we are not going to do... Santa Claus. Now, instantly, there's no Santa Claus presence. Mm-hmm. There's no Santa Claus. Because, you know, if you don't believe, that's it. Mm-hmm. So did that make a difference? Or are you saying I was just as happy as every other kid?
I was going to say, I loved Christmas.
Or I was more happy. Yes.
I don't know. I don't know. I think there is a piece that I was like, almost like, so much more grateful for my parents of like, I knew that they put this together like because they loved me. And so knowing that it was them was like, I'm
some guy in a red suit.
I guess if I thought deeply about it, I'd probably be like, oh, maybe that, you know, fostered gratitude and did all this stuff. But yeah, my parents are great like Christmas celebrators.
It went well.
Yeah.
Okay. Would you say your parents are just good celebrators?
They're very creative people. So, you know, one of my favorite Christmas traditions, we do homemade gifts. And so, you know, our gifts to each other will be, you know, you have to make it, you have to
your favorite homemade gift that you've got.
Favorite homemade gift. I've gotten a lot that I love.
It sounds very artistic. Very artsy.
One that I made that I loved. After I got married, I made... the song that me and my dad danced to. I like put the sheet, I painted the sheet music and painted a portrait of us dancing on it. And it was one of my favorite ones to do and to give, which.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have another story like that that I could tell. That's amazing. Yeah. That's so, okay. So that is the gift that you gave.
Yeah.
How long did you spend doing that to make it?
Decent amount of time. Usually I get to Thanksgiving.
Like 5 minutes. I
did it the day before. No.
On my way to work.
Usually around Thanksgiving.
In session. Could you turn a little bit?
No, usually around Thanksgiving I hit this like, oh, shoot. we're getting really close.
Yeah.
And I have to throw something together. So.
Okay.
It's not always the most organized thing in the world, but... That's my favorite thing that I do for Christmas.
That's nice. Ben, what do you think? A gift that you've gotten at Christmas time from Santa Claus. Can you...
Oh, my gosh.
Let's compare memories.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you never said... You never finished that, by the way. You never got one that you received as your favorite.
A gift that I received?
Yeah, that was the second part of the question.
Oh.
Yeah, I wasn't going to press her, but
yeah, okay. I was gonna say, I've gotten so many.
You didn't answer the question.
my dad recently, because he's done this twice now, because we've lived in two different homes, he's made me like a Christmas model of my house, and it lights up, and it has like us in the window, and like, wow. It's very cool.
That's so cool.
That is cool.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. I would say my stuff is, my parents do things like randomly throughout the year. My mom's really big in sending me just random stuff. She draws pictures and then creates like fake stories. Like she sent me, when I got my provisional, she created an LPC or a provisional license for me and put all these like just random like she drew the whole thing and made a license.
Wow.
And little things like that are my favorite things. Like I've got a,
these are like really cool adult gifts.
They're like, they go, I thought
I was like waiting for go, like, I got a toy truck.
Do you want to bring it up? Story for another day.
Okay.
What happened?
No,
we're not. It's calm.
But yeah, things like that are just, you know, and I would say my dad's not like a, that's not his thing, but he's always been very invested in things that I enjoy, which I always thought was cool, even if he doesn't care anything about them. Like if it's nothing that he's into, if it's something that I'm into, he's all in, like, you know, let's go to the, wherever you need to go to learn more about it, get more, do whatever you need to do about it. I think this is, you know, a good investment in you. So let's, like with music kind of stuff, he's always been real big into that. Like he loves going to guitar stores with me, even though he knows nothing about guitars or anything, but he just has the time of his life just sitting there hanging out, just looking at things, watching me play, stuff like that. And you know, those are fun gifts for me. Like that's, we've gone to a guitar store for my birthday every year for the past couple years and just...
Do you like the Kinks? Have you ever listened to the Kinks?
I've heard the Kinks. I can't...
Alex, can you bring up Father Christmas lyrics by the Kinks? Because you asked, like, what did I ask for as a kid from Santa Claus? And I can't... You've never heard that song? It's probably ancient by now. It used to be very, very popular. But it says, Father Christmas, bring me some money. I can't remember if I get the lyrics. When I was small, I believed in Santa Claus. Though I knew it was my dad. And but last time I played Father Christmas, I stood outside the department store. A gang of kids came over and mugged me and knocked my reindeer to the floor. And the chorus is, they said, Father Christmas, give us some money. Don't mess around with those silly toys. We'll beat you up if you don't hand it over. We want your bread, so don't make us annoyed. Give all the toys to the little rich boys. So,
I don't know what I was expecting when you brought up this song, but this was not it.
it's probably too involved to play. Gary, do you remember that song? No. What is going on?
A very niche.
All right,
song.
So do you know who the Kinks are?
Can we play it at the intake Christmas party?
Yeah.
All right.
There we go.
It's a dangerous song because, yeah, that was one of my memories. Like I would always ask for money when I was a kid. I wasn't selfish. Don't get into, you know, but, yeah. I thought about, this as a teenager. Other than that, yeah, cause I always wanted to buy all the Star Wars figurines.
Oh, nice.
And so if I could get like $100, I could go to the store, but I didn't believe in Santa Claus by that time. I was getting, I wanted my parents to give me some money and get these little Star Wars guys.
When is that? I was thinking about that one day. At what age, like, do you remember the time when you stopped loving, like, action figures? Like, I used to be able to sit there for 3 hours, 4 hours, and just have an X-Men battle. Yeah. And at one point in time, that stopped being something I wanted to do, and...
Yeah, I had army guys.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like I could probably like even as a young teenager, army guys were important.
I bet you had a blast. Did you have something? Were you Barbie?
No. Never Barbie. I had like American Girl dolls.
American Girl dolls.
That was big.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably why you don't know about the Kinks. but it's a separate.
They didn't run in the same circle.
Promise me, I'll play it at the Christmas party, but promise me you'll go home and listen to that.
The Kinks, yeah.
And tell me what you think. So it sounds like you had an awesome experience in the way that you celebrated Christmas. Mm-hmm. You did too, celebrating, with Santa Claus. And, I can't remember how old I was. You know, Gary, do you remember how old you were when you were told Santa Claus was not going to give you presents anymore?
Probably in first grade.
Mm. How about you, Alex?
I think it was like third grade.
Third grade?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I can't remember how old I was. But do you know like where that tradition comes from? I got 9 minutes here on this. you don't know the story of Saint Nick?
I should.
I was gonna say, I feel like I should.
So there's this movie, and I can't, Alex, can you bring up the movie with Kirk Cameron about why we should celebrate Christmas? You have to do some research on it. I can't remember the title. But it's, Kirk Cameron didn't make like 100,000 movies, so hopefully we could look it up. But
it's not Left Behind.
It's not the Left Behind series. The Christmas edition.
That'd be wild.
I can make like a ton of jokes now, but I won't. So the
the apocalypse on Christmas. Apocalypse.
It's like you're ripping over
Christmas Day. People disappear.
I'd watch that movie. I think so, we have
like,
an idea.
If you have
here.
A Santa Claus suit on, you're definitely not gonna go with. sure. But
that's good. We should just wear it every day now.
Now he makes this whole movie, and Kirk Cameron, everybody knows him for Left Behind and Fireproof, which are now really old movies. But he makes this movie about should you celebrate Christmas, and that's actually historically been a question because like early on in American history. Christmas was outlawed by the church. And I think, it's been a while since I looked over this history, but I used to study it. And, the Puritans were definitely against Christmas. And you get in trouble. You get kicked out of the church for celebrating Christmas. And so, is it okay to... to celebrate like with Santa Claus or without Santa Claus, he seeks to answer that. But within that, he lifts up who Saint Nicholas was, and in the old German tradition in parts of Europe, that's where that came out of. And in the Catholic Church, they took these pagan celebrations because in the middle of winter, it's the darkest time of year, and so it was just natural that celebrations would occur to try to. What we believe is lift people out of despair in a place where it was physically difficult. You'd have people who were starving and dying, so you'd have festivals. The church came alongside that and said, let's make these things Christian celebrations. So we know that the birth of Christ was probably not in December. I mean, it could be, but that's not why it was put there. And then Saint Nicholas was an early bishop who he was like a real intense person. He was born rich into a rich family. And then he became an orphan, I believe. And I don't want to misquote the whole story, but that was part of it. And he had this inheritance that he gave his life to Christ. And in the midst of all of that, he took on a heart for other orphans and people who would become destitute. And so one of the ways that you'd become destitute in families is you get into financial trouble, and then you'd have to sell your children into slavery. And so how that would happen, it would happen multiple ways, but if you didn't have the money to pay back, something had to happen. And so St. Nicholas would go around and find these families that were going to be put into a type of slavery, and through the window, he would give his money away and throw through the window in the middle of the night because he wished to remain anonymous. And so the stories of the stockings, like in the old days, you'd hang up the stockings over the fire to dry them. because he didn't have dryers. Mm-hmm. And so just by accident, he was throwing, you know, gold pieces through the window and they landed in the stockings. Hmm. And, you know, people would discover that in the morning and realize that their whole lives had been changed and that they were now, you know, with, you know, had hope they could pay back their debts.
That's cool.
Yeah. And you know, so these might be myths. They might have actually happened. Yeah, but the more definable things about St. Nicholas is that he was also sort of like a John the Baptist type character. He was then eventually thrown in jail, you know, for, you know, challenging a church leader, a bishop. He you know, the bishop was leading the church in the wrong direction, you know, and speaking what he acknowledged as heresy, and he went up and punched a guy out, and they threw him in jail until the next bishop got in and let him go. You know, so you know, he was a radical Christian leader, you know, within the church, and eventually becomes a saint or regarded as, you know, one of the people who, inspired by God, who did it right. So they began to celebrate him as this mythical character who could do anything.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So that's St. Nicholas. Eventually in American history, then he gets commercialized and turned into Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. But in a Christian sense, you know, when God inspires us to do something creative and good, you know, we could have that in our memory and celebrate it. You know, someday we hope that, you know, what we do here, you know, the history of it, you know, will be acknowledged as good. And people will be like, oh, that was really great. What better could we do with our lives? You know, and they would celebrate it, you know, because it made things better. And so that's what we did with St. Nicholas, you know, or what we used to. And now, yeah, sometimes like in Christmas time, it sounds like you've had very good Christmases. Mm-hmm. Some people, they're completely disconnected from that. Mm-hmm. You know, so I would say to the folks out there that, I hope that we inspired you to think about, you know, the possibilities of what you could do in your life. You know, if you're in a place that's stuck, or in a place where you are bored and hopeless, especially this, you know, this holiday season, come talk to us. You know, in a creative way, we'd like to inspire each other, you know, to get back to a place. And you'll meet counselors like Isabel and Ben. If you call, you can talk to Isabel or to Ben. And, you know, there's counselors just like them, you know, who are on our phone lines every day, you know, waiting to talk to you. So you don't have to be alone this Christmas. You don't have to be without hope. And, you know, we hope that together, you know, we could work together in counseling, that someday, you know, what we did in our lives, you know, would be important to people. It would matter, you know, and for that, we have to think creatively. Mm-hmm. We have to get a vision of the future, and that's part of what happens in counseling. That's part of what happens in the church. So thanks for being with us today. Yeah. This was really great to talk with you. And thank you. Could I ask, you know, one of you, would you say a prayer for the folks out there, you know, in the holiday season who might be, you know, in this place where, you know, they're not engaging things. They're just asking for money at Christmas, you know, hoping for something, but really, you know, feeling empty. Maybe we'd pray that we could connect with somebody out there like that. Does that sound okay? Would you lead us in prayer, Isabel?
Yeah, I can do that. Okay. Yeah. Father God, we just praise you for your goodness, for your greatness, God. We stand in awe of who you are. God, we pray a special blessing over this Christmas season, God, that you would just encounter people, you know, in the hard spaces, that you would shine your hope in their lives in a way that only you can. And God, I pray that as people come to us for assistance, that you would just fill us with the Holy Spirit and help us to just meet them where they're at and to guide them into your love. We thank you for the opportunity to meet together and to glorify you. In your name, amen.
Amen.
Amen. Happy Thanksgiving and a Merry Christmas, folks. We'll see you next time.